Blog Talk Radio.
Another edition of Fighting Words on the Fighting Words News Network. Fighting Words is brought to you each and every night of the week in grateful appreciation to the men and women of the United States Armed Forces and the men and women of Police and Fire Services. These are very tough times out there for both domestically and foreign. So if you see somebody in uniform, please acknowledge them. The best thing you can say is, be safe, my brother or my sister. Tonight we want to dedicate the program to a very special person. I've been asked by all 16 of our staff to send out a very happy congratulations and to dedicate tonight's program to the lovely Miss Tiana Booker Parquet. She graduated last week, and we're very happy to say that she is part of our family. She happens to be the daughter of the very famous Zito. Who is coaching tonight, so he may or may not be with us tonight, but her uncle is here, who himself is the father of a beautiful young lady, Miss Asia. So, Ty, how you doing tonight?
I am doing well, sir. Thank you for the kind words. How are you? How is the family?
Everybody's doing great. Everybody's doing great.
Good.
We're about to pass the milestone this week, the 51st anniversary of my wife's 25th birthday. Is coming up.
Oh, wow. That's such a blessing. That's such a blessing to be 25 for so long. That is amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, she's so old, she farts dust. But
please wish her a beautiful day for me and make sure you give her a birthday hug on my account, please.
I will. We're also joined with Bob. Bob, how you doing tonight?
Very good, sir. And happy birthday to your wife.
Yeah, thank you. Bob, when we were off air, Bob was telling me his wife is a Navy physician, and we want to wish her, and wherever she goes and whatever station she goes to, especially an outstation, as soon as possible. But we want to wish her safe trips, and we want to make sure that everybody knows that. We have a great respect, especially this last weekend, which was the 75th anniversary of of D-Day, for all those listening that participated, all those who participated in World War II. We have a great respect for them and the men and women who wore that very special ribbon that I have from Vietnam. So we
thank your wife for the work she does, sir. Absolutely.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
I think it's a harder job than putting up with me, but
that's the real work, huh, bro?
I just thrown it.
That's what the big bucks are really for.
Ty, what'd you think of Austin Trout's 10-round battle there? They ended up with a draw. Well, there was two draws last week that I wanted to talk about. This one and also Ray's. Ray, as everyone knows, good friend of ours, was at Madison Square Garden, went the full 12 rounds, but it only ended up with a draw. So what's that famous saying, if there's a tie in the house, it's a good house?
Well, you know, here's the thing, right? So this is, we had Ray on last time I was actually on the show. He's a great guy.
Great.
So they're bad draws and they're good draws. For Ray, unfortunately, he didn't get the win, but he got a good draw. The reason why he got a good draw is because he came in as the B-side. Although the fighter was from the UK and Ray is from the States, the fact of the matter is the British card. He's a very high prospect in the UK. Ray was brought in to test the kid, not beat him, to test him, give him some work. Take the kid to the next level. You know, it was just for the kid. It was a school. This is the second time this happened to Ray. Ray was also brought in on ESPN to fight. I just have a hard time pronouncing the gentleman's name because he's from, like, Kazakhstan. His first name is Ilgis something. But anyway, Kavakulit, something like that. But anyway, Ray looked like Ray beat him. And, again, he got a draw. So, you know, if you know the fight game, you know, if you're the B-side, as they say, and, you know, the other guy who's coming in, you're fighting against is the guy who's heavily hyped, the guy with a lot of money behind him, the guy heavily promoted. If the fight's close, you kind of usually give it to that guy to maintain his record. The fact that Ray got draws with both of these guys with the decks completely stacked against him, and based on what I actually saw, I thought he won both fights. So they're good draws. It's one of the reasons why he was able to get this second opportunity, and hopefully why he'll continue to get more opportunities.
You know, guys, we're joined by the eminent Dr. Chris, also joining us.
Hey, Dr. Chris.
How you been? I haven't talked to you guys for a while.
Yeah,
a lot of surprises in boxing.
Yes, sir.
A lot of surprises.
Oh, that's right. I haven't talked. Anthony Joshua, I forgot about you, Dr. Chris.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was shocked when I saw the. I only saw a 1 minute rerun of the round that he got knocked out in. I've never seen the fight. They've never put it on. You know, I mean, usually they rerun it somewhere, but it's never been on.
You know,
have you?
What it is?
Have you guys?
That, you know, since they, I saw it on YouTube, but since they've since it's not on cable, it's the Zone, that streaming platform. You're only going to be able to watch it if you go to YouTube or if you were to actually literally get the Zone. So
okay.
It's not going to be, yeah, it's not going to be up on regular cable TV.
Oh, okay. Well, the guy is an amusing guy. I mean, I've seen him on several talk shows. Came on Jimmy Kimmel the other night. Pretty funny guy. And I think he's headed for, you know, he's got a rematch coming up, right?
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
We'll find out. We'll find out what he's got. Maybe it'll be over there. Probably the contract reads it's going to have to be held in England, but we'll be able to see it. Probably get it on pay per view over here. But and I saw a great featherweight fight the other night. Besides heavyweights, I mean, the light heavies. They're weight classes are filled with great fighters.
Mm-hmm.
I saw a beautiful exhibition the other night of a featherweight. He held the title. I think it's his first defense. I'm trying to think of his name now. Christ, I get them all mixed up. They all sound so similar.
Hispanic kid?
But, he just fought.
Dr. Chris. Hey, Dr. Chris, was he an Hispanic kid?
Yes. Yes.
Oscar Valdez, maybe?
Might have been him. Small, 126 pounder. Great left jab.
Yes.
Great hook.
Oscar Valdez.
He fought a much bigger opponent.
That was on ESPN, right?
Yeah, it was on ESPN.
Yeah.
Terrific.
Yeah, that was Oscar Valdez.
That's the first time in 40 years I've seen a guy use his left hook that way. He doesn't turn his left hand in. He turns it out and he jabs straight with it. And he can hook off the jab much faster. And he can land that jab faster, and he can land a hook faster. And that used to be
the jab over.
Yeah, it doesn't turn it over. He just jabs straight.
I did not notice that.
Well, I did because that's the way they taught you to jab and hook in the 50s. And,
wow.
See, I had a trainer that was already 40, 50 years old in the 50s. And he fought in the 20s. Down through the 20s. And that's how he taught you to turn the hand out and jab straight. That way you can hook down. And once I learned that, I became a totally different fighter. I couldn't wait to get back in the ring. And then after that shafting I got up at Henley's, I kind of got discouraged and packed it in because they took my chance to fight in the Philadelphia finals away from me. But that's exactly how they taught you to jab. Johnny Egan, he was 64 years old in 1954, and he fought in the 20s. Tremendous jabber. He jabbed the same way. And for a guy 135 pounds, his hands weighed about a half a ton. He used to hit you in the face. It would feel like a damn hammer. Funny old man, funny guy. I liked him. He trained everybody at the Philadelphia Y. And he had several pro fights in the 20s. He fought the top. He was in the top 10 in the city. He was one of the best featherweights, one of the best lightweights in the city. But the heavyweight division is exciting now. We got Fury coming up. We got him fighting.
This weekend.
I mean, we got some.
It's Saturday, like.
Yes, sir.
Now he's learned to talk a lot better. He's starting to promote himself, and I think he finally wants to make money. He realized he blew a hell of an opportunity. Now he's got another one. So, I liked him. He had a beautiful interview the other night, and I'm finally believing in the guy. He's actually got his own technique, his own style, you know.
Wow.
You know, I'm going to change my mind.
I remember you called him the big goofball.
Big kahuna. Big Kahuna.
Yeah.
Big Kahuna.
Wow,
I call him all night.
Over.
Yeah. He made a converter out of me. I watched him. I watched him,
yeah.
Big Mamu. I watched him train.
Yeah,
I said, wait a minute.
Big Mamu.
Big Mamu, Big Kahuna. That used, but he won me over, the bum. I'm beginning to believe in him.
Okay, sir. Yeah, he's good,
yeah.
Man. He can bump.
One guy we had on the show said he was one of the best boxers. He said he was a beautiful boxer. I'm thinking, this guy
Eddie
all
Chambers.
Right? Eddie Chambers.
Yeah, I remember you said that. Yeah, I remember you
doing that.
Hit his head.
I said, Eddie,
yeah.
You got hit too many times. You know?
That's exactly
Jesus.
What you said. I remember that. I kind of couldn't believe you said it. So.
I said, I can't believe you're saying this. He's a beautiful boxer. He's light on his feet. I'm going, wait
that's
a minute. Wait a minute. You know?
Yeah, but you got to remember now.
Once in a while, you
got to
eat.
Fight.
You got to eat crow once in a while. You know?
How about that?
Doesn't taste good
that?
Either.
Chris, you got to remember that Eddie's last fight. He went to the fight and a dance broke out.
Yeah. I remember him. He. I often wondered how the hell he was 20-0 or whatever he was. You know, but then he tried light heavyweight or cruiserweight, didn't he?
Yeah,
he did.
I think
go down.
He went down. He's the only guy who went down.
Yeah.
Instead of up,
he
tried to
him
fight lighter.
He and Chris Bird both went down, and neither one had success down at cruiserweight.
Yeah.
But Bird,
hey, Ty,
Bird was not
that.
Heavy.
We have Yui Fury crushed Chris Norad the other day in the KO'd him in the second round. What was your thoughts on Yui?
Well, I mean, he wasn't fighting the caliber opponent that he had been used to fighting. I mean, the guy has fought the Joseph Parkers of the world, but you know, he had been out of the ring for a while, so it was a solid comeback fight. More than anything, Yui Fury has been criticized for his style, you know, being kind of contact averse, lack of action. He's a tall guy. You know, he boxes a little bit like Tyson, but he's not as fluid, nowhere near, from my standpoint, as physically gifted as Tyson. But he does, you know, that same keep away, fight at range thing. So he's been criticized for not being exciting. You know, a lot of people sometimes just don't appreciate the sweet science or the subtler, more subtle techniques. They want knockouts, and so by Yuri coming back, delivering a knockout, it puts his name into the public consciousness again. Like you said, the heavyweight division's kind of opened up a little bit with Ruiz's upset over Joshua. Fury's another guy who, when Joseph Parker was a champion, Fury fought him. A lot of people thought that fight could have gone Fury's way, just like when Parker fought Ruiz, a lot of people thought that fight could have gone Ruiz's way. So I think what we're starting to see is there's maybe not as big a separation as a lot of people thought between the presumed top three heavyweights in Fury, Wilder, and Joshua, and the tier below them with the Dillon Whites, Joseph Parkers. A lot of these guys can bump, and Fury is trying to stake his claim to one of these thrones.
Mm-hmm. You can't blame him for going after a big payday, you know?
No.
It's out there now. You might as well go after it, you know?
Sure.
So it's going to be exciting. You know, nothing better than a heavyweight division. But, looked good. Triple G fought. Did you see that fight?
Yeah, I did.
It was last Saturday. Yeah.
Yeah, he looked pretty damn good.
Yeah.
You know, of course
I liked his activity,
his
though. He threw a bunch of punches.
Yeah, he looks like he's starting a body punch again, you know?
Yeah.
He gave up his best weapon. He changed trainers
Dr.
too,
Chris,
didn't he?
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, he's with
trainers.
Jonathan Banks. And Jonathan Banks is the guy who used to train Vladimir Klitschko once Emmanuel Stewart passed.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, Bob, we just changed a little bit here to the MMA UFC fight. How about giving your report here?
UFC 238, that's right.
Yeah, Cerrone and Ferguson. Like I said last time we talked, I thought it was a win-win for Cerrone. You know, coming off these maybe 34, 38 days out of another fight, the guy is just a beast. He just keeps coming forward. We'll take any fighter at any time. But I think the problem with that is he's not improving. He's just fighting his fight. Meanwhile, Ferguson came in from a long layoff, just studying, you know, probably all of Donald's fights, picking him apart. So when they met, it was, you know, an epic battle. I mean, the first round, they just teed off on each other. And they went for it, and it was great. It was in no way like, you know, say Forrest Griffin, Stephen Bonner kind of thing. But, man, they were slugging it out, which was great. And then second round, you know, kind of same thing, just a battle. There was controversy with a late hit from Tony, but I don't think it was intentional, you know, after watching it and stuff a couple different times. But just kind of when you're in there and the adrenaline's flowing, man, if you're not paying attention to that last 10 seconds or you're just throwing a combination, man, you're just unloading. But, you know, people say that shot's the one that hurt Donald. But then after a close review, Donald got done and blew his nose. And that's – every fighter knows that. You don't do that. I don't think his nose was broke, but he shut his own eye, in my opinion. So, I mean, he had taken some damage, definitely taken a lot of – I mean, Ferguson, in my opinion – just found that range. I mean, Donald's a phenomenal striker, but again, he's a bit taller for his weight class, so he's got a certain range to him. And once if he can get you in that range, man, he's a beast and he can set his stuff up. Ferguson, being a little shorter, just stayed either too far away or right inside a Cerrone's range.
Yep.
It just ate him apart, you know.
And you know what, Bob? Going into the fight, what I kind of expected was, I mean, Cerrone's known for his slow starts, but I thought against Tony he would be able to start faster just because of his, you know, specific style. He's got a really good Muay Thai base. But what I always thought was going to happen was that Tony was just going to carry him, kind of like Max. Tony can carry you a little too fast. You know what I mean?
Right.
He pushes a pace that fighters have a hard time keeping up with. And even though you can hit him and tee off on him, that's kind of what I thought. I'm like, not Max, because they remind me of each other sometimes. I'm like, you know, Tony's going to eventually start to drown Donald. Donald's not going to be able to keep up.
I don't think there's a lot of people that can match Ferguson's pace. I mean, he is relentless. And that's the thing. You know, Cerrone, he's known for that late start, but he took too much damage. You know, the late start didn't kick in soon enough. You know what I mean? Kind of thing. It was just a little too late. And then made the big fighter faux pas. You know, I know I've been there. I've been on the bottom of a big man smashing elbows down and completely smashed my nose all over. You know, I call it a Roman nose. It kind of roams all over my face. But anyway. But anyway, when you're gasping for that breath, your eyes are, you know, pooling full of blood. You'll do anything to breathe because you want to keep going. And so I think it was a good doctor stop. I mean, it's cool that my wife has actually, through my career, gotten a chance to get into be a doc in the Octagon and stuff as well.
Oh wow!
Awesome. When the UFC was in town, it was very cool, but so you got to give a huge respect to those docs because they're doing their best job, and if you're gonna do a big fighter faux pas and blow your nose when you've got all that blood in there, man, I mean that's pretty much what shut his eyes. So they stop it on a doctor technicality.
What do you think would have happened in the third round? Do you think the fight would have gone the distance? Do you think Tony might have had a chance to finish him?
I think it would have finished him. He was overwhelming him. He, you know, at the end, he had the perfect distance for that jab. He just kept crushing that jab in there and landing it almost every time. He just stayed right in that pocket, kept backing Cerrone up. And Cerrone, he don't like that. You know, he needs that range. He's got to set that stuff up. So I think, if they would have kept going, say he didn't blow that eye or, you know, blow his nose and that eye hadn't closed, maybe a knockout, I mean, or a ref stoppage, you know.
How do you feel?
Go ahead, please, Dr. Chris.
I was going to ask, how do you feel about that elbow smashing? To me, that they ought to take that the hell out of that sport because those poor guys can't. It's got to eliminate. There got to be a lot of time in between healing, and they're not going to be able to fight often. And once that nose gets smashed, it's easily, you know, squashed the second time. It's very hard to rebuild that structure. Well, how do the fighters in general in the MMA, how do they feel about disallowing the elbow, use of the elbow to the face? Have any of them complained about it?
Not everyone. Like, I've taken the full – my mistake is I would always fight heavyweight in the UFC or MMA, and I'd run about 212, 220, so, you know, mm-hmm. regular. I could cut to the 205, but I always made more money at the heavyweight. So it wasn't nice. Uncommon to have a bigger guy on top of me. And when they bring down that weight, being on the deserving end on that, yeah, it sucks. But, you know, that's what we signed up for.
One way to put it, yeah.
You know what I mean? It's not pretty, you know. Like I said, I mean, I married a doctor. She's got a team of friends that put me back together. I got yelled at by my ENT doc, said, quit coming in here till you're done. You know what I mean? Like, I'm tired of fixing
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
So. You know, so, you know, you're out 6 to 8 weeks for a complete rebuild before you should even be doing any sparring. But it's not anybody that gets hit in the head. We're not the brightest folk anyhow, you know. So we're going to jump back in there as soon as we get a chance to do it. Now, the elbow, they got rid of the 12 to 6. And that clock never changes.
Yeah.
So that's the spike of the elbow coming down, because that's very deadly. And can, you know, completely break an eye socket. Now, normally the flat elbow that he came down with, isn't always going to land. You should have better defense. And it shouldn't land on the bridge of the nose like that. But in my case, it did. My bad.
Oh.
I should have protected better. You know what I mean? But when you're standing up, the elbow is, again, like they call Muay Thai, the art of eight limbs, you know, so the elbows and knees bring in four extra striking surfaces. So they are not to be underestimated in any facet. And I prefer being a Muay Thai guy. I mean, elbows and knees, like I like them.
That's the,
you know,
shit, right? That's the shit, right? That's the shit.
I mean, great. I mean, especially if, I mean, again, if you take the Cerrone, you know, I'm a taller guy. So if some shorter guy catches me on my range and he's got the better day of me and can outbox me inside, I got nothing but elbows and knees. You
yes,
know what
sir.
I mean? That's
yes,
my
sir.
Backup, right? I mean, if you close in, if you come in. So my sport, unlike like Dr. Chris is talking, ultimate pugilism, you know what I mean? Like going way back, like the old school boxers and stuff, you know, where it all started, you know, I mean, that's superb. But mine gives you more tools at more ranges, more distances, and
yes,
more,
sir.
And I'd say the only thing. So, to answer your question, Dr. Chris, to take out elbows, again, being the guy that's on the receiving end of them, you know, it's much easier being a fighter than a coach. I would hate to hell to see one of my kids or students or friends go through that. But with me, it wasn't that bad. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't want the whole sport to change because I took a broken nose. I mean, that's just, you know,
mm-hmm.
part of the par, I guess.
No, I was just going to say, I took Joe Tiberi one time to the nose doctor, and he calls me on the phone. He said, Chris, he said, I'm a hell of a surgeon, but I can't sew potato chips together. So, he said, there's nothing in there but potato chips. What the hell do I look like, a miracle guy? You know,
yeah.
he picks Joe up, and Joe has saved the show. He was a middleweight. He fights a ranked light heavyweight, about 12 pounds heavier than he was. And he broke it all over again. And
yeah.
I said, Joe, you know what? When you're done, maybe you get it fixed. But the doctor can't do any more for you. You know, you just – and it always was a breathing problem with him. It is to this day.
But, and I'll be honest with you, though, with the breathing, like, I was honestly a mouth breather before he destroyed my nose. Now, it just so happened I was going in for them to, whatever that surgery is, to drill out your nose anyway. And I just showed up a couple days prior with it smeared all over my face. I'm like, is this going to be a problem?
Cough just a little bit more.
You know what I mean? Just shock it up there a little bit more. But so I mean, and since then, like, I've been a phenomenal nose breather. I mean, it wasn't until, you know, back when I used to, you know, I was a heavy set kid growing up. So I don't know if that has anything to do with it medically, but would always, you know, pant or breathe through my mouth, and that's really hard as a fighter too, because you got to have that jaw clenched. And it wasn't absolutely. So it wasn't until I started getting my cardio really high that my nose would even open up to breathe. You know what I mean? And so that was I don't know if it's like a soft tissue thing, but yeah. So I'm not against the nose breaking. I mean, it's part of it. You know, I mean, it is the bad side of it. I have walked down that path. Yet, you know, sometimes I feel bad for boxers because they take 90% of the shots to the head. You know, we get to torque an ankle every once in a while, or, you know, bend an arm, you know. So it kind of goes both ways.
Let me ask you guys about last week's 238 when Ricardo Lamas got his face really pounded. He got, three fractures on his jaw, his eye socket, and his face. Did anybody see that?
That was one hell of a right hand he got hit with. You talking about the guy that got hit flush, moved into a straight right hand, hit him? Boy, that was one hell of a punch, wasn't it? Holy Christ! No wonder. I knew he was in trouble. He broke everything in his face. I bet you the floor of his orbit was gone. The zygomatic arch, that's the arch on the side. That was a devastating punch. You know, you get hit like once in a lifetime, you get hit like that. But that's the risk of the game. I mean, that was a straight right hand. That wasn't somebody's elbow. That was just one hell of a punch. Holy Christ. Man, I felt that one, you know?
Mm-hmm. I feel like his mouth was open, too. You know, same thing we were just talking about.
And it was Ricardo Lamas who got crushed like that?
Yeah.
You know, Ricardo Lamas, dude, like, literally just like a couple years ago, he was challenging, you know, just like literally, he just a few years ago was challenging Jose Aldo for the title. And since then, man, he's really spiraled, bro.
Mm-hmm.
Like, his wheels are just coming off, and he's really not doing well lately. This is a guy who literally, like, 4 years ago was fighting for the featherweight title. And, I mean, since then, he's been on a horrendous losing streak. That's crazy.
Pride will keep you in the ring when your body tells you you should be getting out. I'm a victim of that, too.
Wow.
It's hard. It's hard to know when.
What did you think of Henry Cejudo's performance against Marlon Moraes?
Bob, that's for you, I guess.
Oh, I did not see that. I'm sorry. I didn't know you were talking to me. Yeah, I apologize. I did not see that one.
Did you see the Shevchenko fight?
I saw some highlights.
Better yet, did you see the Shevchenko knockout? Let me ask you.
Oh, my God. All right. So that goes back way to the back in the day. I mean, my coach, Maurice Smith, was the first one to knock out a wrestler with a head kick. You know what I mean? So it took out Coleman. You know what I mean? So then it put the strikers back on the map, you know, because the Jits guys had it, and then the wrestlers were dominating.
Yep.
So
anytime
I see a head, are you kidding me? I mean, I'm melted. Whoa. I'm melted. That brings it home for me.
I love Valentina's Muay Thai. I always have. I remember watching her when she was fighting in the regional circuit over in Poland. Just because, you know, I follow the sport. Nonetheless, let me just say this. When she kicked Jessica Eye, I think I jumped up and screamed and said, "Oh, my God, they just killed a woman in the octagon." Like, I think they said it was only the second female head kick knockout in championship history, the other being Holly Holm, Ronda Rousey.
Right.
But this chick didn't move after she got head kicked. She was in crucifix position. I was like, oh, shit. They just killed a woman, just got killed in the octagon. The sport is over.
That's pretty much what, you know, the net's saying, too. It's like the worst woman beat down or the worst woman knockout. Well, hey, it's par for the course, man. It's not, hey, we're not, you know, sitting behind a desk. You know, it's not like we're getting carpal tunnel.
Yeah.
You know, so it kind of comes with the trade, I guess.
Hey, Ty, what do you think about
Lomachenko? Go ahead, I'm sorry.
I was just going to ask you what you thought about Lomachenko fighting Campbell in August.
When is that fight? Is it in August?
Yeah, it's in August. They haven't set the final date, but it's signed
for
August.
Lomachenko is going to have to be completely out of his element at like 140 before he goes in and, you know, in a fight where he's not the favorite. He's going to be a, you know, a pretty sizable favorite over Luke Campbell. With that said, there's some things Luke Campbell can do to, you know, to have, you know, it's funny because when I analyze a fight, you know, be it MMA or boxing, you know, I always look at the path to victory for each fighter. With Luke Campbell, if he's at his best and Lomachenko's at his best, it's more of a path to competitiveness. You know, he's a little longer, a little bigger than Lomachenko. So, you know, ideally you can kind of keep him at range, you know, and box tall. But at the same time, you know, Lomachenko's footwork is so significantly superior. And Bob will tell you this, you know, we could talk about speed all you want, but his mind is processing so much faster. And if your mind is processing faster, then you're going to be the quicker reacting fighter. And Lomachenko, you know, the greatest gift I think he has is his mind is processing significantly faster than a lot of these guys. And a lot of times you'll see him step in, throw a left, bring his right up to block before the punch is launched. You know, he's just processing significantly faster. So until he starts to slow down, I don't see a guy, you know, roughly his size beating him unless he gets caught with a sweet punch. And Luke Campbell's not a, you know, he has power, but, you know, make no mistake, he has power. But I don't think he's the guy that's going to do it. He could be competitive, but, again, that would be the most I would expect. And I don't necessarily expect that, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. What do you think, Chris?
Well, you know, how can you disagree? You know, he's maybe one of the most skillful fighters I've ever seen. And who the hell's going to beat him at his weight? He's going to have to move up in weight and size to get defeated. I think he's, you know, he definitely fighting at 140. 140. What's he fighting at? What was the weight? 140 or 140?
He's at 135.
Yeah, but is he fighting at 140? Is Campbell at 140?
No, they're fighting at 135.
Oh, well, then he's got no problem.
Lomachenko looks maxed out at 135. 140, you're right. He would have a problem at 140,
yeah,
not 135.
Yeah, have a problem at 140. 135, nobody's going to beat him.
And you know, Dr. Chris, and you know, we always talk about in all combat sports, right, styles make fights. And you look at Lomachenko and his style, that would be most apt, you know, for my opinion, to give him trouble would always be, you know, a Salido style. The one guy who beat him, though, he came in overweight, hit him in his nuts throughout the fight and, you know, that.
Mm-hmm.
But nonetheless, it's a guy who's going to be able to cut off the ring, put pressure on him, rip his body, be able to eat his shots. And, you know, right now I don't see that guy at that weight. I see some guys who present some of those problems, but not to the level that they would confuse him but that's what you got to do. Against a guy like Lomachenko, you got to make it a fight. You can't pose with him. And, you know, Luke Campbell himself fashions himself as, you know, a bit of a boxer. And you know, that's just not the guy who's necessarily, unless you catch him, who's going to be able to keep up with Lomachenko, in my opinion, at his weight.
Yeah. 135, he's going to be around a long while, 135. Nobody's going to beat him. 130, he's unbeatable. You know?
Yeah.
I think he's unbeatable. So unless old Father Time.
Yeah.
Father Time will get him. Father Time will get him eventually. You know, gets
everybody, doesn't he?
Gets
yeah,
everything.
Does it. Got me. It's got me. A guy, I was over the driving range, and the guy that I played years ago was out hitting me by about 30 yards. He goes, "Your wife told me you didn't feel too good." He said, "Now I understand what she's, you know." I said, "Hey, Father Time caught up with me. What the hell can I do? I'm not getting younger,
yeah.
You know. And, you know, you can't hit the ball far forever. Sooner or later, your body slows down. Another hell of a lot you can do about it. Same thing in boxing. I seen it over my lifetime happen to Joe Louis, you know, all the great fighters, you know. Father Time got them, you know. Ezra Charles hung in there for a long while. Joe Walcott was a freak of nature. That guy, he was powerful. He was powerful. He had a powerful upper body and had a beautiful left hook. He hung around till he was about 40, and until Marciano got him. And he gave Marciano one hell of a shellacking the night that Marciano took the title from him. Marciano got the hell beat out of him that night. That was a lucky punch, you know. You get all the Italians mad at me saying that, but Rocky hit him with that right hand. I had friends at ringside at that fight, and they told me it didn't sound like a punch. It sounded like somebody hit a side of beef with a baseball bat, you know. You could hear the crack right in the first row. He said you could hear a different sound of that punch when it landed.
Yeah, Walcott.
You know?
Walcott
could take
loaded,
a shot, too.
He was loading
but
up
he was,
on a big right, too, right? He had Rock up against the ropes, and wasn't he loading up on a big right?
Yeah. Well, he hit Marciano with a body punch earlier in the fight. I thought Rocky was done. Uh-huh. He cut, hit him in the heart. He hit him right in the heart with a left hook. Oh, man, that hurt. And Rocky even went down, covered up. But I don't think Walcott realized how much he hurt him, you know? And then I was surprised. Walcott was surprised when Rock got up a couple of times. But when Walcott hit you that hard, you didn't get up. But he got up,
wow.
And that kind of took some starch out of him. And then you know, that was about the 13th round, I think, or 12th, 13th round. And he was 40 years old fighting it. That's a long number of rounds, you know. So we'll see.
Man, I just remember that shot.
You don't,
completely crumbled. Yeah.
Boom. I mean, he went down. We ran all over South Philly trying to sneak in the stadium that night. Nobody had any money to pay their way in. And we couldn't get in. I never saw the fight. I had to go home and watch it, you know, on television, on the news. But I remember that night like yesterday. But I was in college. I was a freshman in college that year.
Oh, wow.
And,
wow.
Yeah. I came home to see that fight. At the Stanley Theater in Chester, they had it.
Right.
Yeah, they had it there. No, they had Ezra Charles there. I'm sorry. They didn't have Walcott there. But they were exciting fights. Ezra Charles was a great fighter, even though he was nothing more than a 190-pound, you know, big light heavyweight. But, man, he was a beautiful boxer. He was just a beautiful boxer. So, and he gave Rock a hard time. He cut his nose bad the second fight. You know, he gave Rock a hard time. But Rocky Marciano was hard to stop, you know. And he wasn't a big man. He didn't have big shoulders. He didn't have big arms. He had heavy, fat hands. I remember that. You know, they were really heavy-handed. And he came to Marcus Sook one time. He drove through Marcus Sook. And Doubleino stopped the car. And he was fooling around with the driver. And the driver said, we didn't do any violation. What are you stopping me for? Well, Doubleino saw the license plate, that champ number one. Who's that guy in the back? Who's that guy in the back? You know, well, Doubleino he had been in 700 bar fights. Most of them he was on the receiving end of a stool. And he really looked like a fighter. I mean, he looked like he had 35, 40 pro fights. So Marciano said to Doubleino, how many fights did you have? You know, he looked at him. And Dub said, I had all of them. I didn't get paid for any of them, he said. And then he put his hand back there. to say hello. He said, "How you doing, champ?" And he said, "Buddy, I got big hands." He said, "But he squashed my hand." And I said, "Well, that takes a hell of a hand to squash yours." Doublino was had massive hands, strong arm wrestler. And then he said, "Hang on, I'll give you a police escort all the way to the Philly Bridge." And he said, "I'll call ahead." Well, and they had a police escort front and back all the way to Jersey. They didn't have any jurisdiction in Jersey. So he did. There was no 95 in those days, you know.
Right.
So yeah. So anyway, we got Tyson Fury. Anybody else fighting in the near future? Very near future.
Yeah, you had Tyson Fury versus Schwartz on Saturday, and then they filled up your homeboy Jesse Hart against Sullivan Barrera. I was going to ask Ty about that one.
Okay. Well, I've been enjoying them. I enjoy the reruns. They're really enjoyable. And I love that PBC, that professional boxing thing that they put on. They showed him right away. They bring the fighters in. They don't have the three. They have 3-minute rounds, and then they start the next round within 10 seconds. There's no commercials. Beautiful. Beautiful. You watch the whole fight in 30 minutes, you know? So if it's a knockout. So I've really been enjoying that channel. Whoever thought that up. And then Teddy Atlas comes on, and then Max Kellerman substitutes once in a while, comes in with some good ideas. But, you know, of course, the MMA gets coverage every night. You know.
So what do you think of boxing and Sullivan Barrera?
I'm sorry.
So what do you think
Jesse
of Jesse Hart
and Sullivan Barrera?
Yeah,
I don't know. You know, I mean, I don't know. I really don't know. I thought about I don't know because Sullivan is a natural. He's been fighting at light heavyweight. Jesse Hart's moving up, but he is a big super middleweight, and you know he's tall, he's rangy. He's got a shot in the fight right now. I slightly lean towards Sullivan. Barrera, you know, I think he's seen better competition throughout the course of his career, and he's used to fighting at the weight. So I lean towards him for that. But I think it's a very kind of evenly matched fight. I'm very curious to see who comes out ahead.
I'm not familiar enough with either fighter. I'm not familiar with him either.
Jesse Hart is Cyclone Hart's kid. Yeah,
I've seen him fight.
I don't know if you remember Sullivan.
Yeah, Jesse Hart.
Sullivan got knocked out at 12 by Bivol a year back.
Mm-hmm.
And he also
Jesse was slated about 2 years ago. Jesse was supposed to fight Frankie Freight Train Fortuna, and he backed out of it. And if Russell Peltz, who was trying to put the thing together, said Jesse was afraid to fight Frankie, and that thing never came. And eventually Frankie retired because I don't know if I've told everybody that our good friend and contributor here on quite a few teams. Frankie was just promoted to sergeant in the Virginia Beach Police Department. As a matter of fact, I just talked to him the other day because there was a shooting in the municipal building, and he happened to be involved in that. I want to make sure that he was okay. But he said he is okay, and he's enjoying his new life. He's training guys now, and instead of fighting. But he wanted everybody to know that he's doing well and he was safe.
I thought about that when I saw that. I knew he was down there, but I didn't see him on TV.
Yeah.
He didn't appear. I didn't see him. I kept looking for his face, but I didn't see him.
Yeah.
It's a hell of a thing, man. I mean, these shootings are crazy.
Yep.
Hey Frank, my son's leaving for Atlanta in the morning. I got to go down and say goodbye, and I got to talk to him a little bit. So I'm going to leave you guys a little early. I'll catch you next week,
Take
and then we'll have something to talk about. We got the big Mamu fighting on Saturday. I hope he comes through. I really wish him luck this time. You know?
Yeah.
And I hope that, because I still want to see him fight our fighter again. You know what I'm talking about. Christ, I should have slipped. Or heavyweight. I want to see that again. I really do. So we'll be looking forward to it. All right, guys. I'll see you next week.
All right. All right, Chris.
Bye now.
Take care.
Bye.
Hey, Ty, one other thing. Joe Joyce and Brian Jennings in July. What do you think of that one? Ty? Chris is off. You there? Ty, you there? Bob, you got any big fights coming up this weekend?
No, but I did want to give a shout-out, and I don't know if you guys had a chance to cover it. I know we took last week off for D-Day and all that kind of stuff, or a week ago. But did you guys cover the that Andrew Ruiz as far as the boxing? Like that guy, you know, I just wanted to give a shout-out to the Doughboy knocking out the big guy.
Wow.
Boxing, you know what I mean? Because I was always the Doughboy myself, you know, never had the ripped abs and all this stuff and was always the underdog as well. And when I heard about that, that was amazing. You know,
you know, people were fat shaming Andy Ruiz, dude. Like, what the hell?
Yeah,
like right. People were literally fat shaming him.
In Super Bowl, yeah. I fought a guy 140 pounds bigger than me, and they were still calling me the chubby one. You know what I mean? Like,
wow.
So I get it. So I wanted to give a shout out. You know, I mean, I don't follow boxing as much as you guys, and I think it's fantastic. But anytime, I mean, the underrated chubby guy goes in and knocks down a Goliath, man, I'm all for it.
Have you?
Hey, you know
what
the funny thing is?
For
people were so caught up.
He wants $40 million for a rematch.
$40 million.
He wants $40 million for a rematch.
That's where he's starting negotiations at, sir. It's in his court.
Yeah. He's the guy now. So.
Yep.
Now, he's not going to get $40 million, but, hey, why not start there?
Sure.
And you know what happened, though, too? A lot of people were so blinded by the aesthetics of the fight. You got a 6'6 colossus against a 6'2, you know, chubby kid, right? So a lot of people were so blinded by the aesthetics of the fight that they didn't really look at Andy Ruiz. Like, my brother Zito and I knew that Andy Ruiz was going to be competitive at the least, just because we know what kind of fighter he is. He's a very good fighter. What's always been questioned is his conditioning, but that's only because of his shape, not that he's ever gassed in a fight. It's just because of the way he looks physically, they question his condition. The reason why he hadn't been so inactive is because he was under a contract he wasn't happy with Bob Arum. He went and joined PBC, and he's on the same team as Deontay Wilder with Al Haymon. They're looking for a quick fight. Al Haymon throws him Andy Ruiz. But Zito and I said, you know what, Joshua's got to take this really seriously because – you know, Andy Ruiz is a quality operator. But then next thing you know, everybody starts comparing the two physiques, and that's what it became about. It was like, okay.
Right.
We'll see.
I always did best when I was the underdog. Anytime I was favored, I pretty much lost. You know what I mean? So it was always going into someone's back door, you know, back own backyard. You know, somebody was talking about that earlier. You really gotta get the W. It's hard to win by points when you're in somebody's backyard. But I'd go in as the underdog and get a submission or a TKO or something like that. So I'm always for the chubby guy. And the hard part is, I mean, and then I kind of like it, you know, being a fighter as well, that this had to cost the organization millions. I mean, they had, from what I understand, this slotted, you know, Greek god coming out of England, and then against we've got a top USA guy, and then here comes Ruiz out of nowhere as a fill-in, And no one pays top dollar to see the chubby guy defend a title. I know, I've been there.
Eight times.
But nonetheless,
earlier about
the chubby guy's the champion.
Yeah, right.
We talked earlier about people getting hurt, and then Dad Judah not only lost his fight on Saturday night, but he ended up in the hospital. They thought he had a brain bleed.
Thank
goodness he's okay. He's okay. Well, he's progressing. He has been released. But there was another fighter on that card who is in a coma. So we, definitely want to pray for he and his family. Forgive me for not knowing his name. But I do know Zav Judah was released and is progressing well.
Mm-hmm. And we get the end of the month. We have another one where nobody can figure out. Jamal Charlo against Brandon Adams. Do you have any thoughts on that one?
Me?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I only have a question. When is Jamal Charlo going to actually fight someone that's a ranked middleweight, as opposed to he's fighting? He's no disrespect to any fighter, but he's not fighting. He's supposedly sitting in a mandatory slot. He supposedly has some type of secondary title, but since he's moved up to middleweight, this will be his third fight. He hasn't fought one top 10 guy at all, and yet he's constantly calling out Canelo and Triple G. Which are fights that can't happen because he's on the PBC side of the fence. What I'd like to see him do is go back and fight Matt Korobov, who took a fight on short notice for Willie Monroe, who had PED issues. I'd like to see him fight Korobov again because I don't think he beat Korobov. Zito and I watched that fight. It was the same on the same card where his brother lost his title to Tony Harrison, which I thought was a fair decision. But I also thought Korobov also beat Jamal Charlo. If not, I thought it was close enough where it could have gone either way. But I edged towards Korobov. So not only has he not fought a top 10 guy, I personally still think he has some unfinished business with Matt Korobov. But, again, Brandon Adams, I think he won like a contender series or something. So, he won some little competition. Hopefully he comes in and he's capable of putting up a good fight like Korobov did. But, you hear Charlo constantly raging about these guys not fighting him, but yet he hasn't fought anyone of note in the class as of yet. So I like to see him step it up.
Mm-hmm. Well, guys, we're just up against our time limit here. I want to thank you again for everything you do for the show each and every week. Bob, you certainly have become a fixture here, and we're glad to have you and able to open up the programming to MMA, UFC fights, and all the background. So
thank you.
We look forward to seeing you. And please give our best to your wife, and tell her she'll be. We'll put her on the. We have a special prayer line at church that we put all the service people on, and we'll make sure that she's on that.
Well, thank you very much. God bless you guys for that.
Thank you. Ty, you want to lead us out?
Gentlemen, it's been a pleasure speaking to you guys this week. Love talking boxing and MMA, especially if we throw a little Muay Thai in there. It's kind of my thing.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Chris, Bob, Butch, always a pleasure. Bob is our co-pilot. Coach Bell's watching over us. I hope you guys have a great week.
Okay, thank you. Bob, anything less? Anything else?
That's it, man. It's been a pleasure talking with you guys. Thanks for calling. We'll talk to you guys soon.
Ladies and gentlemen, these programs are brought to you each and every night of the week in grateful appreciation to the men and women of the United States Armed Forces and the men and women of police and fire services. When you're out there and you see somebody in uniform, please acknowledge them. A handshake, a wink, anything you want to do really makes everybody in uniform feel really good. Again, like I said, the best thing you can say is be safe, my brother and my sister. These programs are dedicated to those who have lost their lives in the line of duty. Deputy Robert Anthony Carroll, Patrolman David Curtis, Patrolman Jeffrey Colcap, Sergeant Thomas Batinger, Patrolman Jeffrey Yazowitz, Detective Randy Bell, Detective Richard Porter, San Diego Officer Mike Hendler, Lieutenant Mike Serba, Newcastle County Police, Patrolman Anafa Crispin, Lakeland PD, Chief Al Hogo, Longwood Key Police Department, Chief Jimmy Ford, Wilmington Fire Department, Highway Patrolman Alonzo Moses, Philadelphia Highway Patrol, Highway Patrolman Brian Lazaro, Philadelphia Highway Patrol, Highway Patrolman Brian Murphy, Plymouth Township PA Highway Patrol, Lieutenant Bob Neary, Philadelphia Fire Department, Sergeant Mike Godwin, Charlotte County Sheriff's Department, Deputy Jonathan Scott Pine, Orange County Sheriff's Office, Deputy Chief Mike Godwin, Philadelphia Fire Department, Patrolman Robert Germain, Windermere, Florida Police Department, Trooper Chelsea Richards, Florida Highway Patrol, Lieutenant Joyce Craig Lewis, Philadelphia Fire Department, Patrolman Charlie Condit, Carpet Springs Police Department, Hillsborough County Deputy Sheriff Charlie Kotloff, Delaware State Trooper Sergeant Rodney Bond, Captain Chris Leach, Wilmington Fire Department, Lieutenant Jerry Ficus, Wilmington Fire Department, Lieutenant Arith Hope, Wilmington Fire Department, FTA Special Inspector Vinny Galaccio, Delaware State Trooper Corporal Stephen Boward, Kissimmee Patrol Officer Matt Baxter, Kissimmee Sergeant Sam Howard, Captain Matt Letourneau, Philadelphia Fire Department, Deputy Bill Gentry, Highland County Sheriff's Department, Deputy Clay Zerba, Clay County Deputy Sheriff, Deputy Natalie Corona, L.A. County Sheriff's Office, Deputy April Rodriguez, Pasco County Sheriff's Office, and Officer Robert McKitchin, Biloxi, Kentucky Police Department. My brothers and sisters, although you may be 10-7 at this point in time, we'll be 10-10 at the table of the Lord. Until that time, may the roads rise up to meet you. May the winds be always at your back. May the rains fall softly on your fields and the sun shine lightly on your face. Until we meet again, may the good Lord keep you and your families always in the hallow of his hands. Good night. God bless and have a great week.
Shem alek ma yilama, shem ahezahir ma, son ashen evorat fet, hakuig again ma yilama.
County Dispatch to 1999. County Dispatch to 1999. All units be advised, 1999 is responding to his last emergency. May God rest his soul.
Thank you.